Well, I don't know if it's a distinction or what to get to share the leadoff message. You know, the leadoff batter can get on any way through getting hit in the head with a ball or interfering with the catcher or whatever. So I'm glad to be here. You know, this very spot, you know, there's a gold circle under right where I'm standing, don't you? At this very spot has been shared by people like Billy Graham and Elizabeth Elliott. That's true. Dawson Trotman, Bill Bright, Howard Hendricks, Gene Moore, and now me. In fact, tomorrow morning, Lauren Sanney will be speaking here, and I don't know this for sure, but I would bet that Lauren Sanney knows as much about what it takes to have a lasting ministry as anyone alive today. And I would highly encourage you to come really ready in heart and body to hear what he has to say tomorrow morning. This could very well be worth the price of admission to hear Lauren Sanney tomorrow morning. And so I would encourage you to take that hour or so that he gives us very, very seriously. But I'm glad I get to stand here tonight. I came to the Glen the first time in 1968. And, you know, it was kind of a mystical experience for me. I kind of felt like the Glen was suspended between heaven and earth, and these animals perhaps were remnants of Noah's Ark, and especially now I called that a moose for 20 years, but I found out tonight it was not a moose. It's an elk. Is that right, Jim? And you don't know if it's a male or female. But you know, I always thought that elk, it seemed troubled to me. And in my first time here, it was as if it's looking out that window trying to spot a guy and a gal holding hands. And, you know, I felt that if I walked too closely to a gal out across the lawn or on that little patio, that that elk would be upset. And it appears he's upset now. I think the others were just, you know, maybe enjoying what they were seeing, although the one down on the end was watching the gallery, and probably for good cause. I've heard that this year snacks are limited, and those are the ones that are eating snacks up there. They've snuck in. And that little one down there is watching you. This one here, I think he tried to dodge the first bullet. But the second one got him. I ran track for Oklahoma University, and my first year here, I was into running, and I wasn't sure. You know, jogging at that time seemed a little too earthy to do on the Glen grounds, to run in shorts and all that. And I thought maybe if I tiptoed out the gate, then took off my sweat bottoms, then that would be okay. But I remember thinking that I better take my verse pack with me to get back in, because I was afraid that they wouldn't let just an earthy jogger back in. I remember going by the gate, waving to the guard and waving with my verse pack in my hand. Because I wanted him to be sure that I was of the kind of caliber that they led on the Glen grounds. I really stomped as I went by. I really wanted to see me, and I remember that to this day. But I'm glad to be here. That was, what, 23, 24 years ago, and it's great to be back, and I hope that your memories are as good as mine. I remember the second time I came here, I was engaged, and I remember bringing Sandy into this room and not quite sure how close I should sit to her. There was still kind of an awe about this place, and We did sit within about 5 feet of each other, but that was about as close as I was willing to get. I didn't know if that elk would jump out of the wall and and lay hands on me and drag me violently out of the Glenn property. But I'm glad to be here. I grew up. I want to share just a little bit about my life with you tonight. I know a lot of you are tired and you've had broken cars and on the way and all kinds of things. But I grew up, I was very shy growing up. You can probably tell it now, I'm a little reserved. I'm not a lead-off hitter normally. And this is a little out of sequence for me. But I grew up very shy. In fact, when I was in the fifth grade, I think part of my shyness was because I was a slow learner. And things didn't come real fast for me. In the fifth grade, I remember not doing well in spelling, and they put me and about five other kids next to the windows, and we were the crummy spellers, and they gave us a pink second grade spelling book to use. Now, normally going to get the spelling books was a real honor, but I was elected for a week to go do that for our row, and I hated going to get those pink spelling books because our words were it and see and look and two. No, we didn't do two. That was too hard. There was three kinds of two. And, you know, the rest of the class was doing animal and forest and together and real exciting words. And I remember that well, of just feeling really incompetent as a student. And that, I think, led a lot to my shyness and being reserved. I remember in the eighth grade, I went out for the basketball team. And I made the final cut. He allowed 16 people to be on the team, and we had the first game where the cheerleaders were there, first time in the eighth grade, and we had our new, brand new uniforms, Whitney Bears in Tulsa, and I was so excited. And right before we went out, the parents were there, the cheerleaders. The coach came up to me and said, "Bob, I'm sorry, we only have 15 uniforms, and I brought these white shorts and white t-shirt for you to wear tonight, and you're going to have to give your uniform to this guy who didn't get one." And I'll tell you, that was the most difficult change of clothes I have ever made in my life, changing out of that new uniform into those white shorts and white t-shirt. I remember walking out on the court, and the coach introduced us, and we dribbled the ball across the floor, and I felt like such a spectacle. Now, I don't know if you've ever had that kind of situation or not, but I grew up just feeling a little insecure because of things like that. I finally found my nook in track, and I was pretty good. I had the best time in the state in the two-mile run my senior year for most of the season. I had the second best time in the mile run and ended up being second in the state and was third best time in the half mile my senior year, and wrote letters around and talked to some colleges, and finally one school gave me an offer to come run for them. That was the University of Oklahoma. Well, I moved into Cross Center, which I don't know if it still is, but it was an unbelievably long walk from Cross Center to the BSU. I didn't have a car, and I remember making that first walk that I think a day before classes started, and I thought seriously about turning around many times, but I kept going and finally made it over there, and since I got there and used all that energy, I was going to stay and see what happened. They had a little ditty, you know, I think a watermelon thing in the backyard, and I met a few people, and so I got kind of locked in to the BSU. And I really felt there was more to the Christian life than I was experiencing. I thought, you know, maybe, just maybe, this group of people can really help me get some vision and some purpose in my life. I met a fella that year that some of you know, Brett Yon. We were totally different. He was very, very unathletic. I was very athletic. He was very, very smart. I was kind of so-so. He was very, very outgoing, and I was very quiet and reserved. And other than all those, we were a lot alike. But That freshman year, we both had a friend who was on the football team and not doing well. He had been involved in the BSU in a Bible study and kind of tubed out, basically. So Brett and I got together and decided we would go see Chuck. Now, I'll tell you, I think you talk about being petrified from walking to the BSU over to the athletic dorm, the football dorm, and going up to his room to talk to him about his commitment was, I think, the most difficult thing I had ever done up to that point. And both Brett and I both were petrified. But we felt that's what God wanted us to do. So that freshman year, we had a few little steps of obedience, just little ones. I went to Colorado after my freshman year, and when I was there, I was working for the National Park Service right up the road at Rocky Mountain National Park. I met a group of high school kids who came up from Denver, and they were sharing testimonies and singing with guitars and all that, and then they went out and shared what Christ meant to them. And I stood back and just thought, good night. Here, I've been a Christian for years, and yet Christ isn't real to me like these young high school students. And I went out to their camp, and they sat around and shared verses and answers to prayer and what God was doing through their sharing their faith. And these were just little 15, 16, 17-year-old students in high school. And I remember going back to my cabin and getting down on my knees and saying, God, I'm tired of my life being like it is, and whatever it takes, I want to be your servant and be your follower. And it's kind of like God said, are you sure? And I said, yes, I am sure. And he kind of said, whatever it takes. I said, whatever it takes. And that began for me a journey in growing with Christ that has not really ended yet. The following year, Max came to OU and began to put into focus some of the things that I was hungry for, to get excited about the Word of God and witnessing and helping people. But what I want to share with you tonight, just in a few minutes, is five snapshots from my life. And I think for most of you, you will relate to a lot of these. These are points of intersection that I came to and had to choose what to do. And it was like a crossroads. And they, in fact, I was thinking just this afternoon, in retrospect, 23 years later, they are more important today than they appeared at the time. Far more important today. And these are real simple. You may think, you know, what a simple message. But I wanted to share them with you because, you know, gang, you are going to face crossroads. You may face more than one this week that you are going to need to deal with and decide on and to grapple with. It could come tonight. It could come tomorrow when Lauren Sanney speaks, or one of the other messages. It could come with your time with God. But it seems like with me and with other people that I've been around that God brings us to junctions that we have to choose which way we're going to go. The first little snapshot I want to share with you, it was when I was a junior. We went to a retreat down in Fort Worth. It was, in fact, it was a retreat hosted by the Navigators. And I don't remember anything about the retreat. I do remember, previous to that, that I had begun to read my Bible faithfully every day. We had heard a message given by Gene Warr on the devotional life. And I was excited. And so I began to write in a journal. I still do. I began reading my Bible with a reading calendar. I still do that. And having a prayer notebook, and I still do that. But it was kind of almost mechanical to me. I was doing it because it was there to be done and because some people around me were doing it. At that conference, I don't remember anything about it, except I remember coming away with one simple thought. The reason I do these things is just because I love the Lord and I want to enjoy His company. And, you know, that is the reason I read my Bible this morning at 5 o'clock before we started loading up to come out here. I didn't particularly want to get up that early. But I just wanted to enjoy the Lord's company for a few minutes before the travel out. And I've had dry times. I've had really great times in the Word, in fellowship with God day by day. But I'll tell you, settling my motive was crucial to me. The reason I read the Bible, the reason I pray, is to enjoy God and to love God. And some of you have not come to that point yet where you've settled that. And I would encourage you to do that. I had to spend some time in Vietnam where all the props were knocked out from under me. I had no one over there that I knew was really growing in the Lord. And it was just me and God. And if you can imagine leaving everyone you know. I didn't. In fact, even the chaplain over there was a Christian Scientist. And there was nothing there for me to even get out of an occasional message. I heard him speak, so I didn't go. And but settling that issue that I meet with the Lord, I walk with Him because I just love Him. I enjoy His company. I enjoy His friendship. He's kind of carried me through these years. And that's the first snapshot, a couple of verses that have been meaningful to me. Psalm 73, 25 and 26, "Whom have I in heaven but Thee? And there is nothing on earth that I desire besides Thee. My flesh and my heart may fail me, but God is the strength of my heart, my portion forever." And then Psalms 63, I learned that chapter up here several years ago. "Oh God, You are my God. I seek Thee. I search for Thee. I yearn for Thee." Just like I'm in a dry and weary land where no water is. And that's been the desire of my heart through the years. And I would encourage you to settle that issue too. The second snapshot or crossroads I want to give you is there was a little simple message given. I was enjoying the theme interpretation a while ago because this kind of dovetails off that. A guy came through Norman that was a campus minister up in Indiana somewhere. And he was a friend of Max. And there were several of us gathered around and downstairs in the BSU. And Jack shared a little simple message about how Jesus drew around Him a few men and built into their lives and loved them and spent time with them, poured His life into them, because Jesus knew that when He went to be with the Father, getting the Word out, getting the Gospel out would be left to these guys. And that little simple message took my breath away. It was like getting kicked in the gut. I couldn't believe what I was hearing. And I'd been in church for years and never heard anything like that clearly. And it just crystallized to me. And I finally realized that God had a purpose for me, that I could pray and ask God to give me a few people to share my life with what He had done. I remember beginning to pray, and one night I was in bed late, about midnight, and really praying, and I just finished that prayer. "God, would You give me someone that I can share my life with? I don't know much." I'd begin to learn verses and to read the Bible, but I didn't know hardly anything. At that moment, there was a knock at the door, and a young guy, younger than me, named Eddie Vinson, was there. And we spent the next 2 hours talking about just the things of God. And I was bit with the vision of making disciples, and it has not left me to this day. The other day, we got out our address list and kind of folded it out and on computer paper. You know how that goes. And the thing dropped to held it up, and it went down. And though a lot of that is the fruit of what God has done, because I made that simple little decision to share my life with a few people that really mean business. And gang, I would encourage you to settle that too. What is worth giving your life to? It's people. Don't settle for anything less. Now, the third snapshot, I related being on the track team with you. And in fact, in my junior year, the track scholarship was paying about 75% of my education. It was paying all my tuition. It was paying all my meals. I ate in the athletic dorm, and it was paying all my books. The only thing I had to pay for was the room part. And I grew up in a poor family. We had, you know, some things, but a lot of things we did with that. I remember when I was in Little League, it was the custom of our team to go get a root beer after the game. And I remember many times my parents driving home and not going to the root beer stand because they didn't have the money to treat the team. And they realized their time was kind of coming around to treat the 15 nickel root beers, a dollar and a half. And I remember sitting in the back seat just feeling kind of really down about that. And so we didn't have a lot of money. I remember the big thrill in my life of eating out was when we drove from Tulsa to Arkadelphia, Arkansas. Back then they didn't have interstates. And we stopped at a little place on the Oklahoma border. I can't even remember the town. It starts with a P. Poto. Yeah, and they had these tremendously great, greasy hamburgers there. And Dad let me have two. And I mean, that was like unbelievable that we would eat out and have two greasy hamburgers. And but I didn't, you know, and so I kind of grew up that way, that money was scarce. And to think about giving up a scholarship that was paying my way through school was really hard for me. But I felt God wanted me to quit. And I know that's not for everyone. I have a good friend who's on the football team that talked about quitting about 2 years ago when he was going through a tough time. And we prayed a lot about it. And he felt God wanting to stay on the team. And he honored God with that. But for me, God wanted me to quit. And part of that reason is because at the time, Max was drawing around him a few guys, and we were really serious about going on with the Lord and learning all we could about how to help other people grow. And track was taking time. I had to do two workouts a day. I was running at 6 o'clock in the morning, and then I would run until 6 at night, two workouts a day. And it was taking energy. But there were some good things happening. I'd led a guy to the Lord on the track team, and there were some reasons for me to stay on the track team. But yet I felt God wanted me to give it up. Well, I did. The hardest part was not figuring out what God wanted me to do, but believing that He would be faithful to me. That was the hard part. I knew full well what He wanted me to do, but I struggled that He would provide for me. And a verse that was meaningful to me at the time, 1 Thessalonians 5:24, "The one who calls you is faithful, and He will do it." If He calls you, He'll be faithful. And so I made that very difficult choice for me. It may not seem like a tough choice for you, but it was very, very hard for me. It was the hardest decision I'd ever made in my life, to walk away from something I'd given my life to. I'd been in organized sports since I was 7 years old, and to walk away from it. And I remember the night that I'd quit, I felt, God, could you just somehow confirm that I really did the right thing? Right after that, I got a call from a friend saying, "Hey, could I buy you a hamburger at McDonald's tomorrow?" And I didn't have any money, and I didn't have a savings account, and I had to start paying for my meals then, right in March. And it was just a confirmation that God was honoring that decision. Back then, a McDonald's hamburger cost 20 cents, and a Coke 10 cents. And that guy invested 30, 35 cents in me, and yet with that, I was assured, yeah, I did the right thing. I don't bet money, but if I did, I would bet money that I would not be here tonight if I hadn't have made that decision. Oh, I'm sure God could still use me, but I was then available and ready to go. And God did so many things in my life that next year because I had the freedom to get some real desperately needed help in training in my life. And, you know, you may face things that God would tell you, give it up. Give it up. But you're unwilling to. And you may be able to function halfway well by keeping it on. It might be a relationship. It might be a job. It might be a future direction in your vocation. And God says, give it up. Lay it out to me. And, you know, it could be that this week you would need to perhaps settle that. It was so important for me to do that. And again, I would say that I probably wouldn't be here if I hadn't made that decision. Now, the fourth one, I'm sure waiting on this. Yes, it is coming up, and that is dating. How can you do important snapshots of your life without getting into dating? And I did have a pretty good, pretty normal dating career in college. I dated three or four gals, but I spent some time where I didn't date, some long periods of time. I went for two or three semesters without having any dates. That was good for me. I needed that. But I met a young gal named Sandy who had transferred from OBU. I remember our first date. Wasn't much of a date. We went over to her grandmother's for sandwiches. Now, I guarantee you that wasn't much of a date, going to her grandmother's. But it was okay, and kind of really the way I wanted it, because I didn't want her to get the idea, you know, that I was wanting to get into dating. And I really tried to make it clear to her that what I was interested in most of all was growing in the Christian life and having a ministry, learn to have a ministry. And I just kind of laid those cards out on the table and kind of let that simmer like a stew simmering on the stove for 3 or 4 weeks. And I wanted to be sure that registered before I asked her out again. Well, we began to date, and it was interesting, though. A lot of weekends we didn't have a date, I must say. And in fact, I was up front with her, and I said, you know, at this point in my life, learning how to help guys grow in their Christian life is more important to me than having dates. And sometime, things may get in the way of a date night, and you need to be comfortable with that. And see, I tried to be very honest with her where, you know, she could take it or leave it. It wasn't like I was being cruel. She just had to take that or leave it. And many times, at the time we had a dude ranch we'd go down to on Friday nights, and it was kind of a quickly thrown together deal. We would decide maybe on Thursday or Friday that Max and Brett and three or four of us would invite one or two younger fellas, freshmen, to go down, and we'd pray and cook hamburgers and study the Word. And a lot of times that was date night for Sandy and me. And I remember many times calling her about 4 o'clock Friday afternoon and saying, it looks like something has come up, and I'll see you at church on Sunday, and maybe we can get together next week. Now, some of you gals think like, boy, that is unbelievably inconsiderate. And yet, you know, I knew that if God ever led us to be married, that the heart of our lives would be in giving up our lives to bless others. And I wanted her to get as clear a picture as possible of what she was getting into. I didn't want to get married and her saying, hey, what's the deal here? All these people in our home. I didn't buy into that. And what's the deal about going away to minister and mission trips and all this? And so I tried to be as real to her as I could. We began to date seriously, and I certainly fell in love with her and she with me. And as I was pondering whether to ask her to marry me, three questions came to mind. And I don't know that this is all that biblical necessarily, but I would suggest that as you begin to date and perhaps consider marriage, that you think about these three questions of whether God may be leading you to be married or not. One question that I ask: were both of us growing in the Christian life as we dated? Or was our date life detracting from that? And, you know, you need to settle that in your dating. Is your relationship with a guy or a gal enhancing and challenging and in nurturing your walk with God? Or is it a distraction? You need to be very honest at that point. Because if it's a distraction now, I guarantee you it'll be a distraction when you get married. You know that most everyone gets married because they love each other? You know, just loving each other is no criteria for marriage. That's one part. But everyone loves each other when they get married. I mean, have you ever met someone and said, I cannot stand this person, but I'm getting married? No. But, you know, half of the people that love each other get divorces. So, you know, just because you love each other is not enough for someone who's serious about the Lord. And so that was the first question. The second one, were both of us growing in our commitment to be effective ministers? Were we both growing in that commitment to really share our lives with people? And I took a long look at that because I had a friend who was dating a gal, and he had this on his heart, to make disciples. And he got in a day relationship, and this girl was a sweet gal, a Christian, but she didn't have that on her heart. And you know, to this day, they're not very effective in the Christian life. They go to church, but there's no depth of ministry in their lives. And so as we dated, as I dated Sandy, was she growing in her love for gals and to help them grow? Was I growing? Or was our dating kind of a distraction to that? And then the third question I asked, were we both headed in the same direction? You know, a lifetime is a long time to be with someone. Are you headed in the same direction? Sandy and I had a date last week, and we spent about an hour and 15 minutes together. We talked about the kids. We talked about church. We talked about the people we're spending time with. We talked about our own relationship. And I'll tell you, that was heaven on earth. And I wish that for every one of you. But you're going to have to settle it, that you're not going to settle for just marrying someone you kind of romantically love. There's more to it than that. There really is. Now, the last snapshot happened in August 1972. We piled all of our stuff in a U-Haul truck, and Brett Yon and his wife's things were in the front of the truck, and Sandy and mine were in the back. And they dropped, Mary and Brett dropped us off in Manhattan, Kansas, in August of 72, and they went on up to Lincoln, Nebraska. And it was about a week before classes started. And I knew that in a very few days, 15,000 students would be arriving. And I was petrified. I mean, I was almost frozen with fear at the thought of that. I thought, how could I do it? I knew a few names of a few students that I had met earlier when we were in the military, but I didn't know much what to do. I had fear. I knew I couldn't compete with some of my friends. I didn't have the gifts that they did. They were going out in campuses, and I felt so insecure. And I remember driving over to campus and parking in one of the lots and walking from one of the dorms down through some woods, just saying, God, I'm here. What am I going to do? And I remember a smile kind of coming across my face. And it kind of was like a revelation or a flash of light or something. I finally figured something out that I'd never seen before, never realized, that because I feel weak, God is going to get the credit. And, I sat down. I had my verses with me. And I had an unbelievable time of worship. And I finally settled it, that it's okay to feel weak.
and to feel incompetent and to feel ordinary, because God is going to get the credit. And that's what He wants anyway. Not unto us, O Lord, not unto us, but to Your name be the glory. You know that I have to take that same little walk every semester, at the beginning of the semester. I do. I did that this semester. And it's kind of a habit now. I drive over a couple days before class starts and walk across campus kind of leisurely, just thanking God that I feel so cotton-picking weak, because He will get the credit. Last July, we had a reunion in Manhattan, and there were almost 300 people there that were involved in our ministry through the years. And you know, I had some real tears at that time. And the tears were of gratitude for God that He can really use ordinary people. And He can use you. And you're going to need to settle that, because there's always going to be people that are better gifted than you in some areas. And gang, this thing of comparison and feeling ordinary, hey, that's just a springboard to see a mighty God. And so you should just rejoice if you feel kind of ordinary and kind of plain, because you're a great candidate for the blessing of God. Now let me tell you how I approach a conference like this. In fact, I kind of approach every day like this. I started doing this a while back. You know the parable of the soils, about how the gospel fell on some soil that was rocky and some soil that had a lot of weeds in it, and some soil that was really fertile and receptive. Well, I pray for my life, and I would encourage you this week to pray that your heart would be the good soil to receive God's truth. And every time you walk in here to hear a message or into a workshop, I would challenge you to pray, God, would You make my heart the good soil to receive Your truth? God wants to share with every one of us some very special things this week. And yet, you have a part to play in that. And you need to prepare your heart for it. And I would just challenge you to ask the Lord that your heart would be that, is in the Scripture, that good soil to receive His truth. And when you leave, and on Friday night, whenever, there will be some rich truth that God is allowing to germinate in your own heart. I want us to bow in prayer.